This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Brian Epps is an African-American activist and executive director of the Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center. Gil Caldwell is co-executive producer of the newly released film From Selma to Stonewall. Are we there yet? He's a retired United Methodist minister active in the civil rights movement and a longtime advocate of gay rights. And Sage Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. Michael Adams, Sage's CEO, joins us as well for a critical discussion to begin to reclaim the narrative relative to the incredible, almost overwhelming tragedy that occurred in Orlando, where 49 people from the LGBTQ community were shot to death and 53 more wounded. And we'd like to welcome all of you and encourage as much as possible the three of you to really engage each other as we try to wrap our head around what happened and how we should understand it as a society, and what it means then to draw a much broader support for the issues that percolate up from the reality of being LGBTQ within this society. And thank you, all three of you, for joining us. And I want to begin with, indeed, how do we respond to the terrible demagogic exploitation of this tragedy, which was directed against the gay community by the Trumps, if you will, whose brash, explosive politicking insisted he would eliminate the immigration of any Muslim and other individuals from countries he alleges have a history of terrorism. Of course, we know that Omar Mateen, 29, was born and raised in the U.S. There are those who are using this tragedy to launch a broad-based Islamophobic campaign and who seek seriously to curtail our civil rights and freedoms. And that's a heck of a big area to start with, but why don't we give it a chance? And let's begin with Brian. And please, Brian, Gil Caldwell, Michael Adams, really feel free to interchange and discuss this and take the conversation where you think it's important to for our society to learn from it and to respond with a more committed support of the members of the gay community.
I'm sure we'll try to do that.
Yes. it's just a very sad time, of course, and of course, in trying to do justice to those who have been taken from us, it's really difficult to do that. You almost want to take the whole time to just have a moment of silence, right? But just to try to speak to your question, President Obama, in his remarks, talked about our democratic ideals not being reflected in anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant rhetoric. But the truth is that our traditions and everyday practices are reflected in this rhetoric, right? America has a strong legacy of violence, whether it's attempted genocide of Native American people and the removal, the enslavement of African people, the ongoing Anglo supremacy that exists and that denies immigrants and folks who don't fit a certain narrative in their family legacy, all the rights that they have. And it's almost like we have a tradition of human sacrifice, even though that's like an antiquated idea. That we allow our fellow citizens to die to gun violence all the time. We pay some sort of homage to them momentarily, and then we go back to our regular lives without taking any serious action, right? So our practices and our traditions do reflect strong violence on a daily basis. We're a highly militarized state, and it just seems to fit to me, this anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant rhetoric just seems to fit into what we actually consider should be our daily practice. We have yet to meet our ideals and our principles as stated in the Constitution in terms of treating people with the respect that they deserve and making sure that everybody is treated equally and with love that they're born with.
Well, let me pick up on that. This is Gil Caldwell, and I probably am the oldest member of this trio at 82, civil rights veteran, but I think what you said is important. One of my concerns is that we so easily jump over who were victimized, black and Latino and, of course, white LGBT persons. But, in fact, we simply, I find political leaders and others using that tragedy to simply foster their own other concerns. I think, you know, in light of what you said, the words of James Baldwin, and, of course, many of his words are so important that I find myself here at my advanced age, quoting him, of course, he said, who wants to be integrated into a burning house? But he also talked about going back to where you started from and telling the truth about it. And I think that that's greatly needed at this point because you've identified the hypocrisy and the contradictions. I mean, looking at a nation with all of the verbiage, the creeds, but not the deeds. And I just seem to think that somehow we must find ways to begin again. And, of course, clearly different from the way, of course, Donald Trump is talking about that. But I'd just be interested in how the two of you think about how, in fact, we sort of revisit the beginnings of our nation racially in terms of gay rights, et cetera, to simply acknowledge our contradictions. And as you've suggested, that we simply are not following our principles, our verbal principles, in the way we respond.
Well, you know, I think to respond in part to that and add to Brian and Gil's comments, one of the strengths that comes from the work that an organization like SAGE does in working with our elders and elders in our community is a perspective that's grounded in history, including LGBTQ history. And when we look at our history, we know that the attack in Orlando is vicious and horrible and brutal as it is far from unique. And in fact, our places where we gather, our places where we have found safety and strength as a community, have repeatedly been attacked decade after decade after decade by many different kinds of people with many different belief systems, some of whom have been fundamentalist Christians, some of whom have been people from many different kinds of beliefs. And it has always been, I believe, a profound mistake to try to focus on and try to discern the ideology or the motivation of one single attacker when that's not what this is about. That's not what this is about at all. This is about systemic homophobia in our society, systemic transphobia in our society. And when we realize, again, you know, to points that we just made, who was targeted in this particular case, and we're talking about LGBT folks who are people of color, who are Latino, who are black, we're looking at a systemic problem, and we have to be vigilant as a community not to allow this tragedy to be hijacked by those who would attack us and who would try to turn us against each other, because frankly, that just cheapens the lives of the people whose lives were lost here. And I have been happy to see really many folks in the LGBTQ community being vigilant from the beginning about this, because sadly it was completely predictable that Trump and the people around him were going to try to utilize this for their nefarious goals.
I would add systemic racism to that, of course, and I'm sure you would include that.
Yes, absolutely.
I think one of the things I, as a clergy person, a United Methodist clergy person, clearly want to identify what you said in terms of the faith-based groups. One of my great concerns, of course, is that how, in fact, we have misused our scriptures. I reach into my own scriptures and talk about how in the Hebrew Bible, people have picked up Noah's curse, the curse of Ham, as justification for the subjugation of black people. And I suggest that we've also, those of us who have not become enlightened in our denominations, have a curse against LGBT people. And so I think that's important. I think it's important to hold the religious community, we've got to hold the religious community responsible. I was interested, the New York Times talks about Georgetown University, of course, and its history of selling slaves in order to deal with debt. But there's an interesting picture of one of the persons who was a part of that slave family, that history, meeting with the president, and they are attempting to deal with that. I am hopeful that as I continue to be pleased with my own university, Boston University, I am a graduate of the School of Theology, that it will continue to do some of the significant things it's doing in terms of overcoming racism, overcoming heterosexism. So I think, as you identify history, it seems to me that universities, with their various departments, have a real responsibility to sort of dig deep and look at this history that has brought us to this sad moment.
Brian?
I definitely agree with both of you. You both raised a very valid point. I think part of why I enjoy the work that I do at the Malcolm X Memorial is because I believe that we don't memorialize and or celebrate these values enough. So if freedom is our principle and is our value, we don't really celebrate that enough in a very truthful way, right? And so in memorializing Malcolm X, we're memorializing a legacy of social justice and human rights, right? And that's not something that we do very often here in this country, and I think that's part of why we miss the point on our practices on a daily basis, right? And so we have this violence occurring all over our country, all over the place, right? The second point into being that in terms of our faith and looking at sacred texts, so many folks want to honor the text, want to honor their religions, but we have to first talk about how these sacred texts are promoting the things that we don't value, homophobia, sexism. The appreciation for genocide is all over the sacred text, right? So we have to look at the text and say, yes, they are sacred, but yes, we also have to realign our values to not celebrate the exception for slavery, for all of the other things that are mentioned in the text as well. So I think that this has to become part of our daily practice. It has to be something that we have to agree on as a community, and we have to move forward from that.
Could I just add, in terms of talking about this text, that one of the things, of course, about the Hebrew Bible, Marcus Borg, now no longer with us, that he wonders, why is it that people pick up the anti-gay kinds of things in Scripture and don't look at what the Hebrew Bible says about the economy, a year of Jubilee, et cetera, and the whole matter of dealing with economics? Would it not be wonderful if people across the continuums could use their faith traditions and other traditions to deal with the economic conditions that are ours, and how, in fact, we have not dealt as seriously with that as we've dealt with somehow acting out our phobias against persons, and I'm hoping that will happen. How does that sound to the two of you?
Well, if I may also just intervene in one sense, Michael, I was particularly thinking as you spoke that while there are 49 dead here and more than 53 wounded, I was reminded of the 32 people that were killed in the 1973 fire at the upstairs lounge in the French Quarter in New Orleans, which until now was the largest death toll in an attack on a gay gathering place in the United States, and should say that Pulse, similarly, was a shrine. In fact, it was a gathering place, such as Stonewall was, such as the church was in South Carolina. where the people were killed. So the culture of bigotry and of violence against the LGBTQ community really courses through the DNA, the bloodstream historically of our society. And I think that is something that is this is looked at with a certain singularity by the mass media, and not at all as part of a systemic reality that our gay and lesbian, transgendered sisters and brothers have faced and are facing.
That is absolutely right, and I think that is key. That is horrific. As horrific as what happened in Orlando is, it is not singular. It is not singular, and it must be seen in its larger context. And I think it is so appropriate to raise and remember what happened in the upstairs lounge, which was the loss of 32 lives in an incredibly, incredibly vicious attack. The upstairs lounge was on the second story in a building, and the attackers poured gasoline all up and down the stairs leading from the ground floor to the second floor, locked the door to the second floor, and then lit the whole place on fire, and the people inside were incinerated. And in 1973, nothing in any way meaningful was done to investigate that attack. Nobody was brought to justice, so to speak. And sadly, the families of many of those who died inside were never even turned out to collect the remains of their loved ones because of the stigma and the bigotry that existed within our own families against LGBTQ people. And in some ways, I think that points as well to some of the progress that we are making and some of the rays of hope here. One of the things that has been really moving to see has been the embracing and loving and supportive response of so many family members of those who were lost. And I want to point out that part of the racism we see in our society now in the LGBTQ context is this caricature of people of color communities as though somehow they remain the unique centers of homophobia while white communities have become more enlightened. We all know that that is not true. And to see Latino and African-American families turning out and embracing and lifting up those young folks, predominantly young folks, who were killed in Orlando, I think is a sign of tremendous progress, as is the fact that many of the first community-based vigils and speaking outs that have been organized have been interfaith vigils, lifting up a great variety of faith perspectives, including, I might add, perspectives from queer Muslim activists. And one of the things that has been extremely heartening for me has been to see the leadership of queer Muslim activists, including Sadia Avjani, who is a training specialist at SAGE and has really been a profoundly important voice. So in the midst of this horrible tragedy, we must remember the history, the systemic aspects of this, and also we are, in fact, making progress in the midst of these horrors, which I think is important to note.
Do you think that Orlando could help us break through this silo mentality, which, in fact, I think I speak now as a civil rights veteran, that sometimes I think our movement was a kind of a silo-like kind of thing that did not engage in intersectionalities. That's why the film that I'm involved in is talking about intersections. But is there a possibility that Orlando and all related to that can be a significant breakthrough for all of us, for the nation, in terms of beginning to see the similarities? Remember, Martin Luther King said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Do you think that Orlando could help us begin to do that in ways that we've not done it before, to understand that interconnection?
Well, one thought in that regard that it still sticks with me. One of the very first telephone calls that I received after the news of Orlando broke was from Dr. Yanira Cruz, who is the head of the National Hispanic Council on Aging. SAGE works closely with the National Hispanic Council on a variety of issues. And it was Dr. Cruz who was actually the very first person who reached me and said, these are our people. These are Latino LGBTQ people who have been slaughtered. And we must join arms and work together. And Dr. Cruz and I issued a statement and been working together in the days since. I think it's just that that's one small example of how there is a great opportunity to break down the silos here and to continue to build the bridges in our community. Fortunately, some of that work has been happening, but a tragedy like this creates the dire need to lift that up. And I think we're seeing some of that in the early days, and we have to make sure that it continues and that we don't allow ourselves to be pitted against each other by the Trumps of the world.
I think we really are at this breaking point, right, where you have Trump really talking about what has been our tradition of violence, right, and trying to make that part of our everyday political process, right? And so we're at the point where folks are actually going to make a decision between our principles going to match our actions or are they not, right? And I think this is really what the election is about and really what this overall debate about. There's also, I mean, there are a lot of people who are coming in support of those who we've lost and who were taken from us. There's also a lot of silence, I noticed, just especially on social media, of folks not speaking out against this injustice and different organizations not helping, right? So I'm hopeful, but also very concerned in terms of our collective ability to respond to injustice, to really try to match our principles that we discussed earlier.
My hope is that that as we reflect, that we can learn much from some of the issues that surfaced with the Obama presidency in terms of resistance to that, of parties saying no, and the rise of Trump. It seems to me that that says something about where we are and what we need to respond to. We've learned a lot about ourselves as a nation in response to the Obama candidacy, and now we're learning a lot about ourselves as there is the Trump ascendancy. It just seems to me that that should serve as a kind of directive for what we must do with greater vigor as we move into the future.
You know, absolutely. I would say, you know, the rise of Trump and the hatred and bigotry and sense of violence that has surrounded him, if that is not a call to action for progressives and individuals and communities that are committed to social justice, I don't know what is. It seems to me that in a sense, to have this kind of a tragedy that brings together homophobia and transphobia and racism happen in the midst of Trump's campaigns. There's a reason why these things are happening together, because these are really a slap in the face to those of us who know that we have got to redirect the course of our society toward progressive values of inclusion and justice, which is the antithesis of what the hatred and bigotry of Trump is.
I want to give, as time races on, and we want to continue to cover this from a number of different perspectives throughout the course of our program, I want to give each one of you, if you would be so kind as to perhaps a minute is hardly sufficient, but if you would rise to the occasion in each one, perhaps a final thought on where we go from here most explicitly. And I have to say that what was looming large in my mind as most critical was that while the I believe politically that whether this assassin was inspired by some extremist manifestation of religion, the reality is that his specific motivation to inflict the utmost violence was perpetrated upon the LGBTQ community, and in this instance, a community who was predominantly Latino. And those really are the threshold issues that must be the takeaway from here. So perhaps why don't we do a go-around with Brian Epps and then hear from Gil Caldwell and Michael Adams. And I really want to thank all of you for the discourse this morning and the contribution thus far.
Thank you, Mimi, and thank you to the fellow fellow panelists. I think there's two parts to this. Again, looking just at our state as a whole and our overall militarization, if the Second Amendment exists to protect citizens from the state, then we have to look at the state itself and look at the violence that we're perpetrating as a nation and look at how that's completely unacceptable to our daily existence. There's also this piece of religion, I believe, and just our overall values. Folks like Malcolm X used the religion to be progressive and to try to advocate human rights and social justice, not to conserve all of the negative values that exist in our society. And I think that's just how we need to look at ourselves and our own religiosity and our own philosophies and theologies going forward. And of course, we have to embrace the fullness of who we are as a nation, that it includes folks of color, that includes our LGBTQ community, that includes everybody who's marginalized, such as immigrants, legal or not, and everybody else, right? And so we have to do these two things in order to move forward in safety and in love.
I'm pleased that we are hearing the name Malcolm X. One of my favorite pictures is that of Malcolm X, of course, meeting Martin Luther King. Martin King's last book was titled, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community? And it seems to me that the civil rights movement was far from perfect as a participant in it. And I'm hoping that my two panelists, in terms of the kinds of things that they have been about and will be about, that one will not attempt to replicate, but simply piece together what we tried to do back in the day to the kinds of things that you're doing now. And it just seems to me that clearly shapes what the future ought to be like.
So when I hear Malcolm X, James Baldwin, as we've talked about here, we're talking about our elders. We're talking about those who have come before us and paved the way for the world that we're trying to build. And I think that's a very powerful, these are very powerful points of reference at a time when we're talking about a tragedy that took the lives of so many young LGBTQ people of color. It is to bring together the wisdom, the experience, and the deep roots of our elders with our young folks, our young people of color, and to really make this an intergenerational movement, as well as a movement across races and across faiths, I think is critically important. And again, I think it's one of the opportunities that can emerge from something as horrible as this.
Michael Adams, CEO of SAGE. Brian Epps, African-American activist, executive director of the Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz Memorial and Educational Center. Gil Caldwell, co-executive producer of the newly released film, which we'll talk more about in another program. You really must see it. It's very important, and even more so in this context, from Selma to Stonewall. Are we there yet? Thank you for your insightful and loving and informative words in the midst of this terrible, terrible tragedy. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.